This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:35. Preston County Schools have something to celebrate this morning. Yesterday, the West Virginia Board of Education voted to leave the county, returning control to the local school board and superintendent. But as Ashton Mara reports, the return of control comes with some conditions.
The State Board of Education declared a state of emergency in Preston County in 2009, and as part of their intervention, seized decision-making authority from the county. Everything from finances to the school calendar, hiring to curriculum, all were set at the state level. But that oversight will officially end August 1st after a unanimous vote from the board yesterday.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
Before the decision, Office of Education Performance Audits Director Gus Penix detailed the progress the county has made. His office is charged with going into a county or individual school to make sure they're running properly.
I'm pleased to announce to you today that much progress has been made in that county.
In the five areas of greatest concern, curriculum, personnel, facilities, finance, and leadership, Penix says the county made great strides. Preston County is currently working to whittle down its 12 facilities to 10. In the last 3 years, all of their buildings have seen improvements, six of them new additions and three new construction. But it's finance, perhaps, where the county has made the most headway. County Superintendent Rick Hicks says they started the previous fiscal year more than $1.5 million in debt. When numbers are finalized at the end of the month, Hicks expects the deficit could be cut to as little as $59,000.
Even if it goes up $100,000 because of something that we, you know, these are just preliminary numbers, not caution people on looking at that. But even if it goes up, the significance of going over $1 million reduction in the deficit in 1 year's time is just phenomenal.
Hicks attributes the turnaround to teachers, parents, and board members who've worked diligently to progress and regain local control. Preston County Board of Education President Kathy McNeil.
I'm constantly asked if our school system is better after 5 years of state board intervention. And I find that as an awkward question because obviously the answer is yes. It's been challenging with intervention, but this board is up for the challenge.
When the state intervened, Penix says board members demonstrated little knowledge of how a county school system operates. Now, he says, they've taken responsibility for their failings and are engaged and knowledgeable. The West Virginia Board of Education is in control of four other county school systems and has threatened Logan County with intervention. McNeil says her advice to those schools, take the help. Make your county better.
I think from day one, from the intervention from the state, that our board took the attitude that we were going to work with the state. And my advice is to take the information, take the superintendent that you're given, work with that, work with the state. Don't be in an adversarial type role. Take it as an absolutely good intervention and keep a positive attitude.
McNeil, as well as fellow Preston County board member Ann Robb, attribute a lot of the county's success to Hicks, their state-appointed superintendent. Hicks took over that position in July of 2013 following Larry Parsons. Parsons had also been appointed by the state but retired. The decision to return local control did come with some conditions. Preston County is to keep Hicks in his role as superintendent for the next 2 years as the state transitions out of the county. Both boards are working on a memorandum of understanding that will detail the change in power. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:39. Partly sunny skies today. There is a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the 70s and 80s today. Mostly clear tonight with lows in the 50s and 60s. Mostly sunny on Friday with temperatures remaining in the 70s and 80s. The outlook for the weekend, mostly sunny skies. There is a chance of rain and thunderstorms Saturday night and Sunday. Temperatures remaining in the 70s and 80s.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by State Electric Supply Company, your full-line electrical supply distributor, online at stateelectric.com.
A study from West Virginia University's Bureau for Business and Economic Research indicates the state's population is expected to drop by 20,000 through the year 2030. But a Gallup poll shows a majority of West Virginians want to stay. A nonprofit organization is working with volunteers on an unconventional way to keep residents in one southern West Virginia town. As Jessica Lilly reports, volunteers renovating a structure built in 1911 are finding small but personal pieces of history.
Community Connections purchased the building and is leading the theater renovation. It's a nonprofit organization that works to prevent drug abuse and better communities with multiple partners. The group also serves as a family resource network for Mercer County. The latest project might seem unconventional, but Executive Director Greg Puckett says renovating an old theater in downtown Princeton just makes sense.
If you continue the environment and you continue just being passive and not doing anything, then people will either give in and do nothing, or they will look elsewhere for those opportunities. And unfortunately, we've been in an area too long where people have looked elsewhere for the opportunities and they've left. Or those that have stayed have been content with what's here. And we simply can't be content anymore.
Community Connections purchased the $85,000 building in August of last year thanks to a donation from the Honeycutt Foundation. Princeton was selected as a blueprint community, which also helped to bring the project to a new level. Entering the hallway from the Mercer Street entrance of the 1911 building is like taking a trip back in time. Originally, Puckett says a jewelry store sat on the left, a doctor's office to the right.
But then on the right side, where the doctor's office was, this is the only existing tin structure really that is left. But because of new fire codes, you know, we do have to take the tin structure down. Unfortunately, because of the damage of the ceiling and everything else, we couldn't really save it. But what we
As
are
a way to preserve a piece of history with an artistic twist, Puckett says the tiles will be removed and painted by local artist Richard Shrewsbury and available for purchase. Puckett says he hopes this project makes folks feel connected to the renovation.
That's the main thing that we want people to have a sense of, is that, you know, they have a part in this whole thing. Is it's not a group, it's not an individual. It's really about everybody working together to make this a reality.
Over the past 3 months, volunteers have worked to gut the theater to turn things like the former doctor's office into the theater box office.
Step over into what was originally the jewelry store, and they've had two different jewelry stores in here.
And work is underway to transform the former jewelry store into a museum.
That not only reflects the artistic heritage of Mercer Street, but really Mercer Street itself. So this is going to be a way for us to look back to the past.
Since the theater was known as the Royal Theater when it opened in 1911 and then became the Levon Theater around 1956, Puckett says the museum will be called the Royal Levon Museum. The theater itself will be called the Renaissance Theater after the project helping to make it happen, the Princeton Renaissance.
And it's really about that rebirth and that you know, paying attention to the arts and the culture and the history. So I think that it's aptly named, and a lot of the people in the community were the ones that chose the name, so we went with it.
Puckett says he's also hoping to house a unique arcade.
Stuff that's going to be, you know, looking back to the 30s, 40s, 50s, and, you know, so it's going to be, you know, even like whack-a-mole and things like that. It's not the digital age. It's more hands-on. It's more tactile stuff. So we feel that that kind of gets back to the history and still adds a lot of fun.
We'll head in here to the main auditorium. These doors were actually the doors that hung in the theater back in all the way through the 1950s. It's got real nice pane glass. These doors were probably around $4,000 doors. So we want to make sure we try to keep the integrity of these. It's more of an Art Deco style. And then as we move into this area, we've started gutting out which was the foyer. And, of course, you've got your stairwell that goes up to the balcony area.
At one time, 100 seats were reserved for African Americans on the balcony, since only whites were allowed on the floor. Puckett says other pieces of history not necessarily worth cash, like candy wrappers, ticket stubs, and film, were uncovered as workers peeled away layers of walls to remove the boiler and replace the pipes.
Back on this back wall, when we started gutting out, we discovered one of the original planters that they had for sort of like a deco style in here is still left on the wall. So they would put some fake flowers in that, and you can see the original design that had come up through the theater with the, you know, the little Omega piece there.
Puckett also found what appears to be a sketch by an architect that laid out plans for the 1950s renovation, and even the silver screen, which was painted blue, was found crumpled on the floor.
And when you're pulling film and you're pulling things of where the projector's head sat. It gives you that sense of nostalgia, and it makes you feel like you're on an American Pickers episode. I mean, you're going through and you're finding all these really cool things that to the common individual, you know, they'd look at it and go, oh, it's a ticket stub, and they throw it away. But when you know you're holding a ticket stub that's probably 75 to 80 years old, and that somebody took that stub, they came in, they got it torn by a doorman at the door when they're walking through, they probably picked up some popcorn, they probably did all those things. And you know that you're holding a piece of the history that somebody else had 75, 80 years ago. That's important. And
that Puckett says reminding us of our past is a good way to look into the future.
Signal that, you know, we're working on not even our generation. We're working on the generation to come. We want people to come downtown. We want people to feel engaged in what they're doing. And I think by doing these little things and taking everything with significance and importance is really what's going to make this whole place be better for the entire county, not just for Princeton, not just for Mercer Street, but for everybody involved. This is a step in the right direction.
Puckett says when complete, the theater will be open to the community for events. In an effort to attract families, Puckett says no R-rated movies will play at the Renaissance Theater. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jessica Lilly in Princeton.
Talcott, West Virginia, is the home of folklore hero John Henry. A project is underway there to restore one of the town's oldest buildings to serve as an information hub about the legend. Jared Klein has more from Summers County as it readies for an annual festival honoring the famous steel-driving man.
Dylan Superette, a convenience store, was housed in what was an 1890s general store before it closed its doors 2 years ago. The owners were very active in the community and donated the old building to the John Henry Historical Society for a promise to restore the building back to its 20th century look. And that's what William Jones is doing. He, along with members of the John Henry Historical Society, have been working on refurbishing the building. This involves exposing the original tin ceiling, finishing the wood floors, and removing siding to show the original. The building now houses the John Henry Museum, a place that tells the story of the legend and helps visitors interpret the tale. Jones says that the museum and annual summer festival are significant for a variety of reasons.
So it's good for the local community, it's good for the economy, and it is important because John Henry is the most famous African-American laborer in history. It brings everyone together for the history and culture of West Virginia.
The new museum is part of the development of a 26-acre park dedicated to Henry. The park will house future John Henry Days, a cultural event that attracts thousands to the tiny town. One of the features of the museum is interviews from the 1920s and 30s that were part of a study conducted by the University of Kentucky. Jones says that while they have already spent a few thousand to renovate the building, it will take between $15,000 and $17,000 to finish. But no need to fear. The museum will be open for John Henry Days this weekend. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jared Klein in Summers County.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Cecilia Mason. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.